Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where facts over feelings? More like, we're fact. That's how I'm feeling. Facted over feelings. Lakers are 0-4, baby. I'm your host, Jonathan Hernandez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Tommy Alexander, and I've got the facts, and Tommy's got the feelings. The facts? Well, the Lakers are the worst three-point shooting team in NBA history currently.
Yikes.
Yikes is right. And they may also just be a legitimately bad team for the second straight year in a row. Now, the feelings? Tommy, how are you feeling?
Not feeling too good.
There you go. You heard it from Tommy first. He's not feeling too good. And as you can tell, we have Tommy on a drive-by recording as he makes his way down the 110 freeway on a Thursday night. Anyways, the Lakers lost to the Nuggets 99-110 and have dropped their fourth straight loss of the season. They are currently 0-4 without a win, joining just two other teams in the NBA with no wins. The 0-5 Magic and the 0-3 Kings. Although the Kings do play the Memphis Grizzlies tonight, they'll likely be 0-4, but who knows. Anyways, with Westbrook, without Westbrook, with Darvinham, without Frank Vogel, Lakers are all still just 0-4 at the end of the day, all with LeBron James and Anthony Davis on this roster, and Rob Pelinka, Jeannie Buss, and the Rambi are the main common denominators here. So yeah, with Westbrook still on the roster and the Lakers talking out of both sides of their mouth with regards to this team's identity, who could have possibly seen this coming? So Tommy, some quick stats. I have some quick stats to dole out to you with regards to starting off 0-4. This is the first time LeBron James has gone 0-4 to start the season since his rookie year.
I saw that on ESPN.
Yeah, I know. Quite the 360 turnaround from year 1 to year 20. Also, the Lakers have never started 0-4 in Jerry Buss's 34-year tenure. Did you see that one?
Yep.
So, since the 1999-2000 season, only 10 teams that started out 0-4 have made the playoffs. That's a span of 22 years. Also, no team that started out 0-4 has won the NBA championship. So, cool beans. Anyways, before we continue on with this episode, you guys know the drill. If you could please spare 30 seconds of your time and rate and review us 5 stars on the Apple Podcast app. And at the very least, just hit the 5-star button at the top of our Spotify page. That would help us out tremendously. Our motivation for potting and our general joy and litness is waning by the game with this Lakers team. So if you guys could show us your support, that would be amazing because you guys are the only things keeping this show alive. So please shoot some 5 stars our way. The more 5 stars you send us, that's an extra 3-point shot the Lakers will make throughout the entirety of the season. And as you all know, given they're currently shooting like 22%, they will need any extra made threes they can get. So, Tommy, to the point of three-point shooting, and this is where we'll get into the show, the Lakers are shooting 33 of 148 on threes this year. That is 22.3%. The worst three-point field goal percentage over any four-game span by any team within a season in NBA history. Matt Ryan, who we signed officially to the roster like 2 days before the season began, is 4 of 8. So if you take Matt Ryan out of the equation, they're shooting 29 of 140, 20.7%. Amazing. Okay, so let's get into things. The Lakers are 0-4. What do you make of this team and this start? And I do want to caveat things by saying, for me, that's actually not too far off a record from where I had us at this stage, because I had us at 1-3 with the one win coming against Portland, and we should have won that game. But where I'll caveat that caveat is, I think the fashion with which we've been losing is alarming. And by that, I mean with AD playing phenomenal on both ends, his three-point shooting notwithstanding, with LeBron playing stellarly in three out of those four games, and then with the rest of the role players actually buying in and the defensive scheme and energy being a somewhat consistent foundational pillar, having all those things set in motion, yet still losing all four of our games while also shooting the worst three-point percentage in NBA history, to me, that's very alarming. Are there flashes of something to work with here? Yes, absolutely. Defensively, like I mentioned, you definitely see flashes of a dynamic group of versatile players who can wreak havoc. But to me, they're just flashes at the end of the day. And my biggest question is, can the Lakers sustain that level of play at their current size for more than two quarters of a 48-minute game? Can they sustain that level of play for the next 2 weeks, the next month? And even with those flashes, again, we're 0-4. And to me right now, the fun, small ball, versatile defensive spurts we've seen with LeBron at the five, to me it just seems like a nice little gimmick. And you can't rely on that for the majority of a game, let alone the majority of the season. And I know we've had a tough schedule to start, but Tommy, we've known we've had a tough schedule to start since August, and we decided to do nothing about that. And so here we are, the place we expected to be at, because Russell Westbrook is still on this team and we failed to address the main on-court issue that we had all last season. So what's your overall take on the Denver Nuggets game and how we've looked since we last potted after game one?
Yeah, look, like you said, there have been some spurts that have been encouraging. I think the Denver game, while frustrating, I think is just, you know, look, it was game four of the season. You know, first, I guess somewhat, we started the season on the road at Golden State, but that's within state, an hour flight away. You know, I'm not trying to make it seem like Denver is some epic road trip for this team, but for game four of the season, when most NBA vets are still kind of playing themselves into shape, it is tough to deal with that altitude. And you kind of saw it with LeBron and AD. I mean, those guys were gassed. I mean, we gave up 35 fast break points. That is atypical for most teams. I imagine especially a Darvin Ham team is not going to, you know, be happy giving up 35 transition points. Part of that is Denver used the altitude to their advantage and ran us off the court. And you know, I don't take away too much from that other than the whole overall theme of the season, which is that this team is just not an 1 through 10, like, adequately equipped to compete on a night-to-night basis. We have done some interesting things, particularly defensively, that have enabled us to frankly frankly make the best of this sort of wonky roster and turn a team with eight guards or whatever we have on the roster into a team that you know, can actually compete most nights. I don't know where we stand now, but going into the Denver game, we were with second or third or something in the league in defensive efficiency. And that is a small sample size, but it's also a small sample size of, like, you know, really all four of the teams we've played so far are going to are projected top 10 offenses in the NBA. You know, so like we have been competing defensively, but this team has so many issues in terms of like NBA quality depth, you know, and that is going to become a huge, huge problem. I mean, the fact that we have put together a team around two, you know, when they're healthy, top 5 to 10, you know, you want to stretch it top 15, 20 players in the NBA. And we are like by far the worst offensive team in the league. I mean, we're averaging the least amount of points. We're scoring points out there like it's 1999. You know what I mean? And, yep. You know, we're by far, like you said, historically bad as a 3-point shooting team. And, you know, all it really feels like people are willing to say about those two facts is that, you know, the same thing they've been saying since May, which is that, oh, it's going to take time. And, oh, you know, guys are going to have to make shots. And, oh, we feel confident that these things are going to improve. Like we hear that every year and nothing has really changed. The last thing I'll say is like, I think you tweeted this yesterday or at some point, and I think it really hit the nail on the head, which was, you know, how many more years, like, you know, of talking about doing the right things and then coming into the season using the first 5 games as your preseason? Like, how many more times are we going to do that? We're not the defending champs. We shouldn't have that luxury. You know, the last time we came into a preseason serious and won a couple games, it led to a championship. And for some reason, like, everyone is still so happy to fall back on this, like, oh, none of this really matters, because we have LeBron and AD and we just need to get them to the playoffs. And it's like, you're not getting to the playoffs if, you know, you're not taking these types of things seriously.
Yeah, it's a trickle-down effect. And the Lakers, if you include the preseason this year, they are 1-9, including some ridiculous preseason blowouts by 47 points and 30 points, respectively, to the Sacramento Kings. Okay, so...
Yeah,
I agree with pretty much everything you said. And AD at the 5, LeBron at the 5, these nice small ball lineups where they're whizzing up and down and they're able to hold the Denver Nuggets to 13-3 over the last 4 minutes of the first half. Are those great and fun to watch? Because they did that in pretty much every game, right? They've had spurts where they're able to hold their opponents over a 5-minute stretch to, you know, 5 points or something. But like I mentioned, to me, it just seems like a nice little gimmick because it's all about sustainability. AD and LeBron James can't keep this up for... They can't even do it in a game, you know? And I understand that maybe... Yeah, go ahead.
And I just want to say something about AD at the 5, okay? I understand that, like, you know, everyone is on the same page. And when the playoffs come and when the closing game lineups come, AD at the 5 is going to give you the best balance on both sides of the floor. There's no denying that. But you have a guy here who is, like, screaming for the world to hear. And, like, everyone kind of treats AD at the 5, like, as though, like, this guy is just being kind of selfish and he should be playing the 5 and he's just kind of being a pansy about it. This guy's been screaming for the world to hear, I prefer to play the 4. I prefer to not play the 5. And maybe somebody should listen to him, because when we try to play this guy at the 5 for any sort of significant extended periods of time, he gets hurt. Okay. And the guy's body is not built to take this kind of physical abuse. He's much better in like a free safety type of defensive role, where he could play a little bit on the perimeter, play a little bit of inside, be a weak side shot blocker, be a weak side ball deflector. And, you know, he doesn't want to be in there mucking it up with Jokic and getting rebounds. And beyond the want, it is like actually causing him to become more injured. You know what I mean? Yep. And we're just like happy to continue rolling this out. It's like, it's just to make our otherwise wonky roster fit together. You knew that AD prefers to play the 4, and not just a preference. Maybe it's an injury and sustainability thing. And we just refuse to acknowledge that aspect of it. You know, it's like becoming very frustrating. I mean, here we are like 4 games into the season and the dude is having back. He already does not look as explosive as he did like game 1 of the preseason.
Yeah, it's wild to me that the front office doesn't seem to have a pulse on their own players, you know, who they've had for the last 5 years, 4 or 5 years. But anyways, as I mentioned, at the end of the day, to me, the summary is the Lakers have a sustainability problem. Whether it's maintaining and managing Anthony Davis and LeBron James' usage and minutes and giving them the proper support around them, or wondering whether all these three-guard lineups with smalls can actually keep up their frenetic defensive spurts for more than a quarter run or two. And the biggest thing outside of that is just, or in conjunction with that, is running AD and LeBron James into the ground unnecessarily, right? I mean, that's pretty much what we were both hinting at. We both, over multiple podcasts this offseason, we both incessantly warn people about this exact scenario that the Lakers are now find themselves in if the front office didn't address their biggest on-court problem in Russell Westbrook and field a more competent roster, right? We said that if we're still trying to futilely accommodate Westbrook and still working with an incomplete, half-assed roster waiting for some mid-season trade to materialize, that could potentially put an immense burden on AD and LeBron earlier on in the season that may burn them out by the time you actually figure out what the hell you want to do with your roster and get some actual reinforcements. And by that point, it may be too late. And at 0-4, it may be too late. And this is why we said, you know, giving up two first-round picks for like a Buddy Hield or a Miles Turner is not just about getting Buddy Hield and Miles Turner. There is added value in the timing of when you get that done, i.e. before training camp, so that you actually give yourself an actual chance to build out some cohesion early and get that momentum ball rolling to avoid this exact scenario that we now find ourselves in, where LeBron is pushing out not-so-subtle subtext messages on Instagram 4 games in, where AD is clutching his back in game 4 after playing 36 minutes a game. And remember when Darvin Ham said, I'm not trying to play LeBron James and AD more than 30 minutes a game to start the season. And here we are, both of them playing 35 plus. You know, all for the sake of being 0-4. And again, this goes all the way back up to upper management. So my one question to you before we get into upper management and before we take it to break is this just a product of a tough schedule? On the one hand, you could say the Lakers were dealt a tough hand with this early schedule because Warriors, Clippers, Nuggets are all playoff contenders, and even the Blazers, while middling, still have Damian Lillard and are currently 4-1, though I will say all of their wins came essentially on game winners, so I don't think they're actually a good team, and Damian Lillard is expected to be out the next 1 to 2 weeks, so they may slip in the standings, but I guess my caveat to that is the Warriors, Clippers, and Nuggets were far from full strength and either had main starters completely out or on a pitch count. And regardless, besides that, let's just agree that the Lakers had a tough earlier start to their schedule in comparison to most other teams. Even if we agree on that premise, our schedule isn't necessarily going to let up anytime soon. And as I mentioned earlier, this front office and this team knew what the schedule looked like back in mid-August, okay? They knew this was coming. We all saw the schedule and were like, I think at best the Lakers are 3-7, you know? Yeah. And we decided to not do anything about our roster to hopefully help us stem the tide here. So we all saw this coming, and it's turning out to be even worse than we initially expected, all because, again, it starts with an institutionalized systemic self-sabotaging by the front office who chose not to do anything about this Westbrook situation, and they proceeded to do nothing to address the Lakers' clear deficits in 1, size, and 2, shooting. The fact that we are relying on Matt Ryan, a DoorDash driver, and Matt Ryan's been great. I'm not trying to throw any shade at Matt Ryan, but the fact that we're relying on a dude who we signed 2 days before the season started and signed 2 days before training camp started, he clearly wasn't part of the larger plan. So to me, it trickles down from the top, and we're seeing the erosion happen from all levels now. And as you mentioned last podcast, we're once again scrambling and we're in this frantic state to start the season. And I am not sure if we can recover from here.
I don't think we can either. And look, on the comment I want to make on the tough schedule is, you know who else has a tough schedule? the Orlando Magic. You know who else has a tough schedule? The Sacramento Kings. What I'm trying to say by this statement is when you suck, every game is hard. Okay. Mm. And that's the situation we're in right now. I mean, like you said, Denver was not at full strength. Not only were they not at full strength, they were the worst defensive team in the NBA coming into that game. There's 30 teams in the NBA and Denver was 30th in defense coming into that game. And we made them look like, you know, the mid-2000s Detroit Pistons. Okay, so like when you suck, your schedule is hard because every game is hard, you know? So we have a roster problem. We have an NBA depth talent problem. And you have the opportunity to turn an albatross contract into multiple players. I'm so tired of this argument of like, nothing catapults us. You know, I'm only going to use both picks if it makes us a serious contender. What teams are serious contenders this year? There's never been this much parity. What makes you a serious contender is getting into the playoffs with a healthy LeBron and AD and rolling the dice from there. That makes you a serious contender, because even when you start at the top of the West, you're looking at the Warriors, it's hard to repeat. Everyone knows it's hard to repeat. They have that going against them. The Clippers have not been able to stay healthy for a full season in the last 4 years. Okay. The Denver Nuggets are the one of the worst defenses in the league. Dallas relies too much on Luka. Minnesota is asking Karl Anthony Towns to defend on the perimeter. The Pelicans are pretty young. I mean, you can go down the list and you sort of you can poke some weaknesses in like all of these teams. And I think a big thing is getting there. You know what I mean? And everyone, it's kind of disturbing to me at this point that like when these trade discussions come up about like how we're going to use these picks, people are so focused on like, well, this trade doesn't net us someone who can defend Jason Tatum in the finals. You know what I mean? And it's like, how about we worry about getting to the playoffs? Because that also has value. You know what I mean? It's like, do we want to be the New York Knicks where we're like begging for Jalen Brunson to come sign with us? And, you know, and like that to be like the one silver line or like one kind of glimmer of hope we have to turn the franchise around. Like when you have success, even if it's just repeated moderate success, you can lure guys in because they can view themselves as like, I might be the one guy they need to fill it, plug a hole in the rotation. And then we can, you know, we can do some interesting things. When you're repeatedly rolling out 30 win teams, it becomes harder to do that type of thing.
Yeah. And well, and beyond even trying to make the playoffs and build towards something that can moderately resemble a contending team, to me, it's just like, why don't you just think about the health of LeBron James and Anthony Davis? Because you know what types of competitors they are, right? If you give them a faulty roster and you know before the season starts that it's a faulty roster, you know they're going to eventually start pressing. You see Anthony Davis out there with a bad back continuing to play because he knows people are going to get on him for not playing, right? But you've put him in this situation where he doesn't have the requisite amount of support around him. You've put him in a situation where he feels pressed and pressured to go out there and drag the team on his back, to the point where we're now in a must-win game situation against the freaking Minnesota Timberwolves, okay? And
AD might not even play, by the way.
AD might not even play, but actually he might play because he feels pressured to play.
Yeah.
And we're going to see Anthony Davis and LeBron James run themselves into the ground to try and carry this faulty-ass roster that you built them. And you knew it was a faulty-ass roster. So to me, it's all about process. And look, I appreciate the podcasts like Laker Film Room who break down the intricacies of the game and whatnot, but I'm not in the micro-analyzation part of things in this season yet, because to me, it's pointless, because I go back to the front office and the fact that they don't even know what type of team they've assembled. So to me, it feels futile to even look at the nitty-gritty details of what's going on in the court. And that's just my personal take on things. I can't get myself to analyze this team for too long because I know that it's not the actual roster, or it shouldn't be the actual roster we'll have in a week or two or maybe a month or two, you know, because this current front office still has no semblance of an idea who they are, what they want to become, what they're trying to do with this season. And to me, it goes back to process. And that's something we've been saying all offseason. Even outside of making the playoffs, even outside of trying to win a championship, do you think that this front office has done right by process starting this offseason?
No, they have not at all done right by process. And part of the reason it's pointless to microanalyze this team is because the team is a mess at a macro level. Usually when it's like you get into like the micro analysis, it's like, well, you know, this team should be winning games, but so let's try to like dig into why they are, what they're doing right, what they're doing wrong, what they need to improve on. That's like so far away from where we are. Our whole roster is broken, you know? And so it's, you know, again, not holding guys accountable. Like, there was such a focus on holding guys accountable at the team level. Where's the accountability for the front office? Where's the accountability for Darvin Ham and how he's managed, you know, kind of these first four games and how he managed the preseason? Where's the accountability for Rob, you know, when it comes to signing for, eight guards on this roster, not addressing the three-point shooting, having Woj go on ESPN and talk about how, you know, the Lakers aren't concerned about three-point shooting because via free agency because they feel they can easily add it through a trade. You know, like there's just none of that.
Well, where's the accountability for the media circus that we all anticipated and that we're now in 1 week into the season, where why are we getting lineup rumors about Austin Reeves starting, you know? Like, we knew this was going to happen. We knew this was going to be a distraction. We haven't even gotten to the off-court implications of, like, how this has affected the team. We're four games into this season, and it already seems like everybody's subtexting each other. You know, subliminally saying stuff to each other on the sides. And every interview is now so, the guys are being so curt with the reporters. Like, who could have anticipated this happening? And it's all because, Tommy, the Lakers are serving two masters right now, or maybe multiple masters. Because they are, as usual, half-assing multiple things or trying to balance multiple plates. They claim to be trying to field a competitive team while also trying to integrate a Russell Westbrook who doesn't want to be here and who they know they'll trade at some point. I just don't understand how they could have thought this was a good idea or that it made any logical sense to do this. So,
you know what? Look, I mean, these are the... But they're the same guys who have... I mean, chronically undervalued their own assets. They're the same guys who traded all of the entire roster's depth and a first round pick to get themselves into this situation in the first place. And so the crazy thing is, it's like, we kind of just lean on like these guys patting themselves on the back all offseason being like, yes, we understand we're addressing it. How many mistakes do they get to make, you know, year after year after year after year? Like, the guys that worked last year, we let them go. The guys that, you know, worked the year before, we traded them all away. You know what I mean? It's like, and adding players that don't really make sense, doing weird things like signing Dennis Schroeder after you have five point guards already because he looked good in Eurobasket, and you're not really sure if you could, like, you're not really sure if you can give him minutes, but like, you just don't want the asset to walk away. Like, we're talking about a guy that no one else in the entire league wanted to sign. Like, right. That's the thought process that's happening in our front office.
Like, how many more years do we have to live with this? Apparently 3 more years after this one, because Rob Pelinka was extended. But you know what? Let's leave it right there. We'll take it to break. When we return, we'll close this episode out talking about some interesting stats that the team has put up through the first four games, and also talk about the macro question of where we should go from here, because even at 0-4, I feel like we're at a pivotal fork in the road moment where the front office finally has to step up to the plate and make a damn decision. So we will catch you guys after the turn.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, You're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All right, so we are back. Tommy, are you ready to look at some interesting stats? I'll give you the bad first.
Okay.
More with regards to three-point shooting, if you can believe it or not. The Lakers are eighth in the league in three-point attempts at 37 a game. So it seems like they're up to snuff with the modern NBA. Unfortunately, they are dead last in makes at 8.3. So they are the only NBA team that isn't averaging 9 threes made per game. They are shooting, as I mentioned, 22.3% from three. Since 1999-2000, that is the worst three-point percentage in NBA history. The next worst is this year's OKC team at 27.3%, which is a 5% bump from us. And then the 2002-2003 Denver Nuggets at 27.8%. With regards to field goal percentage, you mentioned how they're like in the bottom five or whatever in points per game. They're also second to last in the league in field goal percentage at 41.6%, likely dragged down by their three-point percentage and their three-point attempts. The only team worse than us, the OKC Thunder, in field goal percentage, okay? Who are actively trying to tank for Wembanyama. The Lakers are also dead last in offensive rating with a 96.9 rating. They are 26th in overall net rating with a -7.1. And as expected, they are second to last in overall rebounding percentage. So let me try to spin things a little bit more positively. On the positive end of the ledger with regards to stats, the Lakers are number two in the league in steals with 10.5 strips a game. How do you like that?
They've been active. I mean, you can't deny that. They've been very active and using their hands well on defense. And they definitely, I mean, the eye test backs that one up. You've seen this year, we've been solid defensively in years past, but this year it feels like we're causing a lot more disruption in terms of knocking the ball away.
Yeah, and Anthony Davis in particular is averaging like 2.5 steals just by himself. It's kind of crazy. The Lakers are now, after four games, are fourth in defensive rating at 104, behind just the Suns, Cavs, and Bucks, so that's been impressive.
And it's been impressive, like you can say small sample size against very good offensive teams.
Mm-hmm. Although there is a caveat stat out there talking about how a lot of the teams the Lakers have faced so far have had a lot of wide open looks, even despite this defensive rating. And
True. Those
teams are just missing wide open shots. And you could
early
maybe
season,
say like,
yeah
early season trying to get their feet under them sort of thing. Lastly, the Lakers are second in pace behind just the Warriors. So they're kind of setting out to do what they intended to do. But again, as I mentioned, because you're serving so many different masters all at once, it's like you only see flashes of these stats, right? Because on the other end, you're still trying to give Russell Westbrook 27 to 30 minutes, right? And you still haven't swapped out his position with actual viable starter level players or shifted AD to the four spot, et cetera, et cetera. And until those things are addressed, these stats will remain sort of flashes. Let's talk about positive player standouts so far. Who stands out to you? Because I'll go first and say, Lonnie Walker, he, in spite of the fact that he can't shoot, and we kind of knew this coming in, he's not a consistent shooter. To me, he's almost like a shooting guard version of Kuzma, in the sense that not a consistent three-point shooter, but he brings the energy and versatile scoring, and he's done a lot of good things with regards to driving it into the paint and finishing. So I really like what I've seen from Lonnie Walker, and on the defensive end, just his activity as well, and fighting over screens and being able to shuffle his feet, reminiscent of when Kuzma finally bought into the defensive end of things his last 2 years with the Lakers. So is Lonnie Walker one of your positive standout players?
He's probably the biggest standout for me. I think, you know, Lonnie, all the analytics were so bad on him. I was so low on that signing. I was just like, what is this guy going to do? Is he even going to make the rotation? When it comes time to start, I'm like, here we go. Another clutch favor. We're just going to start. Again, he is a young player. He's not a perfect player. He has flaws, but he competes on both ends. He doesn't, he takes too many threes. His shot selection is a little suspect. You know what I mean? But like, frankly, some of his, the reason he's had to take so many shots is because we've been so poor offensively. So overall, I've been probably the most impressed with him. He is, adds a very nice athleticism dynamic to the starting group. And I, you know, it's so far, I feel like it's been a good use of the MLE that we had to use this offseason.
Yeah, I agree too. And my only problem with Lonnie Walker at the beginning was, I mean, I can still debate that I'd rather have Isaiah Hartenstein or Jalen Smith here, given the fact that we rounded out the rest of the roster with shooting guards, more guards. But it was always Lonnie Walker signing and us being down on it was always, it was always in the prism of we already have so many guards, right? So that's the only reason why I was down. But he's definitely, I think, proving that he's worth that contract and maybe more. So he's been a nice bright spot in the same way that Malik Monk was a bright spot. But because he adds that defensive element of things, I think I'm almost more bought into Lonnie Walker in some senses. I'll just go down my rung of other positive standouts, bullet points really quick, and then you can give any other guys that stand out to you as well, just to keep the pace up. Troy Brown Jr. has been a nice pleasant surprise in the last two games since he's entered. Solid player, high basketball IQ. He's a floor general with size. And in light of, you know, Kendrick Nunn struggling to start off this season and Russell Westbrook being Russell Westbrook, it's been kind of nice to have a guy who has high basketball IQ on the court and can play make a little, but also not need the ball in his hands to keep the ball moving. And he's almost like who you wanted THT to be last year. And I kind of see him as if you fuse THT and Stanley Johnson into one player, right? He's like the more calm, settled version of THT, who's not the scorer type, but he has the length. He can cut into the paint off ball, but he can also play make a little in the same way that we saw Stanley Johnson playmaking towards the end of the season. And he just gives you more size. And I think he's played really well off of LeBron James and Anthony Davis off ball, which is the most important thing. And then some other quick hits. Austin Reeves, he's actually hitting his threes. He's shooting 40% from three, and in the last two games, he's hit two threes in each of those games, and that's a really nice positive development. I think he can be more aggressive and continue to shoot that shot. And then Matt Ryan is our best three-point shooter at 50%, hitting 4 of 8. So those are my quick hits. Any other positive player standouts outside of, obviously, Anthony Davis and LeBron James?
Yeah, to follow up on the Troy thing, you know, the 3-and-D kind of prototype wing has been like a, I don't know, a staple of basketball for the last two decades, at least, it feels like, you know. So the problem, though, with that is you get a lot of guys who fit that mold on paper and they end up being big time stiffs. Troy Brown Jr. is like a basketball player. I actually like never really followed him super closely other than, you know, the Laker trade rumors that have come up in the past. And other than that, pretty much just watching his highlights, he's always been kind of low minutes guy or not a firm rotation guy on like middling teams. So I haven't really paid too much attention. That guy can do things with the ball. I mean, he can handle it. You know, he's solid, solid defender. His jump shot looks good. I mean, he hasn't been hitting it so far, but he's probably a little rusty. But I really, really like his game, and I hope he will continue to get more minutes as the season goes. Fully agree with you on Austin. He needs to be taking more shots. You know, we're running these sets that, like, you know, we've seen in this quote unquote motion offense or whatever, that motion spread offense that Ham is trying to run, that like the Spurs have run and the Hawks have run and the Bucks have run over the years. And a lot of a big staple of those offenses is guys catching the ball at the 3-point line, pump faking and driving to create another, collapse the defense and either create another look or an easier shot. And I feel like Austin too much pump fakes off open look, good looks, and tries to get a look for somebody else. I don't know if that's a function of them maybe putting in his mind that he should take on more of like a point guard mindset or what, but he is what he, like you mentioned, he's shooting 40%. He hit a couple threes like the last couple of games. We need 3-point shooting. He's got to be more aggressive trying to score. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's just something young players have to learn sometimes, is when to be aggressive and when to play make. And I think he's being too deferential to his veteran teammates, and he needs to be trying to be a little more aggressive for himself.
Yeah, I agree. Now, with regards to players to worry about, for me, it's Pat Bev's offensive game and his shooting. I mean, we talked about this coming into this, where it's like, it already seems like he's had regression, 34% last year, and he's never really been a volume three-point shooter. And obviously, he's like shooting, I don't know, like 18, 20% this year. And it just, yeah, it just doesn't look great. He looks washed up offensively. He's doing great stuff on the defensive end and kind of, you know, drumming up the defensive momentum for the rest of the team. But if you're an absolute liability on the other end, it just hurts, because we're already a team full of offensive liabilities. So you can't be another one of those when your whole thing was like you hit your wide open threes, right? And then Damian Jones, I'll chalk some of this up to just like not handling him right in the preseason, like the rest of this roster, because this is pretty much this is like the second time I've seen him in consistent minutes, and it hasn't even been consistent. But Damian Jones' hands and his lack of a second jump burst is kind of concerning given how athletic he is. I will say I'm not going to go down the same path that I did the last time we had him, where I kind of threw him out the door quickly when he wasn't producing the way I expected, and then he gets traded to Sacramento and all of a sudden he gets his second wind and it's like, oh, Damian Jones is amazing. So I'm willing to give him time, obviously. And again, the ham and whatever they're trying to do with Westbrook has done him no service here, because it doesn't seem like the team is on the same page of what they want to do with the roster in general. But I just hope that he rounds into form, because right now he looks rusty, right? And I think he'll jump, he'll snap into place, but that comes with reps and a consistent role. But just from what I've seen, he's like, it seems like he's always fumbling the ball. And instead of just going right back up with it, he has to collect himself, right? So that's one concerning thing that I've had. And then with regards to the most concerning player that people are talking about, I actually put him in the neutral category, and I'm talking about Kendrick Nunn. I know he's looked horrific, but like, he's not going to stay this way forever. And I feel like the last game against the Nuggets was kind of a microcosm of the start of his season, where he was like 0-6 to start. And then all of a sudden he gets a layup to go. He gets a mid-range jump shot to go. He gets a lob to AD to go. It's like, yeah, we need to calm down and act like we've seen an actual 82-game regular season and the ebb and flow that can happen for players within that season. And I think it's just Kendrick Nunn is going through a rough stretch. We're going to need him, and I think he'll be able to find his way out of that. So any players of concern for you, if you want to tack on to what I already mentioned, or anybody else?
I'll just tack on to a couple of those. I mean, so Pat Bev, I totally agree. This was the concern, was that his shooting has taken, offensively, he's taken a dip. You know what you're getting defensively. I mean, the guy's elite, and he's doing a great job on that end, and even just like mucking things up and annoying people, like this roster could use any advantage it can get, and he's helping in that regard. But you know, he kind of got his reputation for being a steady three-point shooter, playing for, you know, the Rockets, playing for the Clippers, in situations and offenses designed to where he was only taking catch and shoot wide open corner threes at a low volume. And more and more nowadays, the way defenses have adapted to all of this stuff, and especially on a team with no spacing, he's not doing that as much. A lot of his three-pointers are coming from the break. I mean, like, he is still missing the corner ones, don't get me wrong, but he is taking a lot from, like, the corner, from, like, the angles, like, you know, above the break type of threes, and that's not his game. He's taking a lot, like, dribbling around a screen and shooting it off the dribble. Like, that's not his game, so if he's going to keep taking this quality of three, then like, yeah, he's going to shoot low 30s, and nobody should be surprised by that. That said, you know, looking at Damian too, the one thing that concerns me about him is the basketball IQ aspect. It just feels like everything out there takes so much like mental effort from him. You know what I mean? Like when sometimes he'll make these plays and you're just like, your jaw drops because he's so athletic for a guy that size. And then, like, sometimes he'll make a play where, like, LeBron, like we're talking about a split-second game, okay? These are, like, elite NBA players, and you don't have the time to catch the ball off a bullet pass from LeBron, gather yourself for a second, and then go up and try to make a play. And it feels like every step of everything he does, there's, like, a gathering step. Like, he catches the ball, and it takes him, he could be wide open under the rim for a dunk, and he doesn't just, like, burst off the ground to dunk it. He, like, takes a second, looks around, and by the time he's going up to dunk it, he gets fouled. And then it's like you're sending a guy who shoots 50%. So it's like those are low. You're taking a 2 point per possession, turning it into one. You know, that's horrible, you know, and he does it too often, in my opinion. And frankly, defensively, I don't know what the numbers look like with him on the court, but I mean, it's got to be a huge drop off when AD's not there. And that's not his fault per se, but like in these drop coverages, it's like he doesn't, like, you're supposed to drop, but like you have to defend the guy eventually. He like drops all the way back to the rim, and pretty soon he's like under the rim and can't contest the shot. And the guy's like, he's like giving up layups on these like pick and roll coverages, you know? So on both sides, the mental lapses have been like concerning to me. And I feel like Thomas Bryant would have, and by the way, he didn't look like a world beater in the preseason either, but like he probably would have taken some of these minutes at this point, had he not been hurt.
I will say though, for Damon though, I don't know if you've noticed this, but he has made some really nice passing reads out in the perimeter. So I think the gathering thing is just, this guy's rusty and he wasn't even part of the preseason rotation. I think this is a natural course of like, get these guys some reps. The big men were totally phased out because they look, it's kind of like the Kent Bazemore thing from last year, where it's like, okay, they look bad, let's not play them at all for the next 9 games. And all of a sudden, let's try and rely on them. Like, what do you expect to happen? You know what I mean? So, but yeah, I agree with your concerns, but yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, he's a young player, so this stuff can be fixed, but it's a little concerning that, you know, we had two big men other than AD and neither of them have looked particularly impressive. Yeah. And then I kind of, you know, agree with you on none. Am I concerned, quote unquote? Sure. I would be maybe more concerned if everybody else was playing great and none looked like crap, but everybody kind of looks like crap. So, you know, it's like none over the course of an 82 game season, I think we'll pick it back up. I'm a lot less concerned about him than I am about some of these other guys we have at the bottom of our bench.
Yeah, I agree with you. So for the last 5 minutes, let's talk about the Lakers on a macro level. What should they do from here? I don't want to go into specifics of they should do this trade or whatever, but I mean,
yeah, should they still try and swing a trade with the Pacers, Spurs,
yes.
Charlotte, mystery?
What the Lakers should do at a macro level is use all their picks that they're eligible to use, which is 2027 and 2029, as has been well documented at this point, and Russell Westbrook. And even Max Christie, who is a waste of a roster spot on this type
Not
of roster,
Max
to be honest.
Christie.
And use all of that and get whatever the best yield of 2 to 3 NBA rotational players is. Again, I just...
They've already wasted enough time as it is.
They've wasted enough time. And I don't know what the plan is for these picks long term. Again, everyone's like, well, you know, the way that they got the Athletic to spin this, right? Like, no, the Lakers are looking to walk into the summer of 2023 with their pockets flush full of $30 million in cash and a slew of first round picks in the future. And it's like, what are you going to use those picks for? The two things are mutually exclusive, the cap space and the picks. We don't have any long-term salary to attach these picks to. So the earliest you can use these picks, if you don't use them this year, is going to be next year's trade deadline. Because that's when you can trade the guys you signed with your $30 million of cap space. So what is the plan long term? We go into next season kind of with another half-baked roster. Like, we have some NBA depth right now in Lonnie Walker, Kendrick Nunn, Austin Reeves. I'm struggling. Toscano Anderson, Troy Brown are pretty decent end-of-bench guys. Like, we have some guys who are NBA depth types of pieces for us right now, and we can add to that. Okay, the $30 million that everyone's kind of hanging their hat on is assuming that we drop all of these guys. Okay, so you drop all of these 4 or 5 guys I just mentioned, and you end up picking up two guys with your $30 million. Okay, so then you have another depth problem. So then you're filling out the roster with minimum type guys again. And then you're coming into the season with all your picks and a half-baked roster again that you're going to try to fix in December and February again. So I don't understand that people are viewing it's like we're going to go into summer of 2023 with our 2027 and 2029 draft picks. That's going to be so valuable. No, it's like we can't do anything with that. Like, maybe we trade a guy using a pick into our draft, into our cap space, but then we're not using the cap space to sign a free agent. So it's just like
Yeah.
Like, the two things are, like, actually you know, mutually exclusive. We do not have both the way that it's sort of being presented. Like, oh, we're gonna have all our picks and our draft space. It's like, yeah, we're gonna have the picks, but then we can't do anything with them because once we sign these guys next summer, we're not gonna be able to trade these guys until next December, next January. So it's just like wasting more time. They need to make a trade now if they want to do anything.
So, I mean, we've rehashed this topic over and over again. I think the far more interesting question is there a point to it now, in your opinion? I mean, it's 0-4, so it's not insurmountable.
But at what point do we start? Let me just finish.
Go ahead.
At what point do we ask ourselves, you know what, even though it's a pick swap with New Orleans, maybe we do just go full reset with, you can't trade LeBron this year, but maybe we try to trade AD and we stop playing this little charade that we've been doing. And, you know, like, is there a point past no return, essentially, for you? Because we already missed that first checkpoint marker of, like, you should have done this thing before the training camp started. You know what I mean?
So
yes.
We're here where we're at. And have your expectations recalibrated? Or is it for you, there's like, there is a window here. Like, the next three games, the next week, if we get a trade done, then we can still salvage this season. Or are you to the point where, and I'll just give my thoughts, I think I'm at the point where, yes, I would like to see us just try, just make the attempt for the sake of Anthony Davis and LeBron James, because just think about how this looks optically, that you're not actually supporting the superstars who came to save your franchise and got you a championship. That's going to look bad on other superstars who eventually want to sign here, right?
Yes.
That you're not actually doing something. Just make the attempt is my point. But
yes.
Even with that, even when the attempt has been made, I personally am recalibrating my expectations to, yeah, make a run at it, make the playoffs. But for me, my goal is not a championship, not even necessarily the playoffs. It's just get to as close proximity in record as you can to the New Orleans Pelicans and focus on making that pick swap less damaging. If that means both of you make the playoffs, great. If that means we get a better record than the Pelicans, then great. Like, that's the whole plan all along. But now I've lowered the bar so low to the point where it's like, let's just make sure that our record is within 5 games of the New Orleans Pelicans. So even if they have to pick swap with us, we're not, you know, losing out on a top 8 talent. Meanwhile, the Pelicans have, you know, a number 22nd pick in the late first round or something, you know? So what about you?
For me, the pick is what it is. It's a swap. We put ourselves in this position. It is what it is. I'm not going to take the moral. I'm not saying you were saying this. I just think that, like, to me, the moral victory of having the swap not bite us in the ass that much is not a huge factor. I mean, the way I'm sort of looking at this season is as follows. I think last season, I would not have felt this way. I give this team 10 games. If we don't make a trade in the first 10 games of the season, I think at that point it becomes pointless. The reason I think, even though we're 0-4, going on 0-5 and potentially worse, and that is not like completely the end of our season, is because when you're playing defense at this level, even when your offense has been so bad that, like, you put so much extra pressure on your defense, when you're playing defense at this level over an 82-game season, you're probably going to win some games that you should not have won. And so, like, we've gotten some losses out of the way. They were against pretty good teams, but we still have a chance, you know what I mean, to win some games that maybe we shouldn't have won because our defense is that good. So I don't think it's all kind of a lost cause at this point. I think there is still time to turn it around. And I think the types of player, you know, the types of depth pieces that we're looking for in a Russ trade, you can just plug and play, you know, and yeah, it's going to take some time and there's going to be an adjustment, but like, it's not necessarily, I'm asking for like, we need to trade Russell Westbrook and get like an NBA All-Star number 3 type option that's going to take some time to figure out with AD. It's going to be like 2 to 3 guys who are just going to be like another one of the guys. And so I think there's time to do that. And the season is not lost because of the defense we've been playing so far.
I agree with you, but we are running out of time and we are essentially saying the same thing we said 2.5 months ago. But this is the front office that we are working under, and so we will continue to cross our fingers and pray that they will reach some sort of sensical epiphany, but don't hold your breath. So with that said, that'll do it for this episode, and we will catch you hopefully the next time we do this. The Lakers will have at least one win. So
yeah,
we will catch you guys next time, and go Lakers, go, go. It's still lit. We can do this. All right, Tommy, I will catch you later.
Peace.
See ya.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.